Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 120, SEC Media Days. We are all a little creepy when it comes to football. Recorded July 15th, 2014. On this week's roundtable, we're back after a summer hiatus, just in time to talk a little SEC Media Days. Things start off just like in Hoover, with a look at Mike Sly's comments. And what do they really mean? Shane Bailey looks at Mike's comments and can't understand how he adds up, possibly to get 13 bowl games for the SEC. Next, they look at the head ball coach and what fireworks he brings to the meetings. Britton Burton talks about Derek Mason's comments about winning the SEC, as well as talk about Will Muschamp's honesty. All this and more on this week's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey, back after an extremely, extremely long hiatus. But it's now officially the unofficial kickoff of football season. So we're back in high gear, ready to get this season started. And with me tonight is Britton Burton. Welcome, Britton.
Hey, good to be back. I missed you.
Well, thanks. My face, along with yours and most of the crew's probably not been on for a while or on the podcast, and we apologize for that. I as a host take full responsibility for that. We were doing some show prep beforehand, and you know, I was just explaining to Britton, and I'll let you guys know I'm finishing up a master's and was doubling up some classes, and I'm just not a huge fan of baseball. I'm not that I don't love baseball, but it's hard for me to get into college baseball. And so because of that, there wasn't a lot to talk about. It was just easier for me not to do a podcast. And that's a bad disservice for you folks that have listened to us on a regular basis. So I apologize to you guys personally for that. It is July. It's the middle of July, so we are going to go hot and heavy from here on out. Be looking for our previews to be starting up next week. I'll be doing two teams a week, so there's going to be two podcasts a week to help get you caught up on everything that we believe that's coming down the pipe. But we have media days going on, and that's why I said it's the unofficial kickoff or official unofficial kickoff of football season. I think this Thursday is the 6-week mark, if I'm correct.
I believe so.
Until the games actually start. So we are right around the corner from real football. Lots of pads getting hit against other pads, grass flying, pigskins throwing around. I'm a little excited. I didn't realize how excited I was until I just started talking here. And it's like, wow, football is going to be here before we know it. But we are in day two of SEC Media Days. And so I'm going to do my dead level best to have this up tonight. I've got some extra free time I'm going to devote. So this podcast will be up Tuesday night. It'll be available for you guys when you wake up Wednesday morning if you're listening to this. So new content Wednesday, talking about the media day. So you get a great refresher of what's happened to get you ready for days 3 and 4 as we look at the SEC media days. But, you know, lots been going on. I think Mike Slive kicked things off. And kind of threw that shot across the bow to the NCAA. I don't know how much of the comments you got to see from Mike's live yesterday and what he had to say. But he basically, I think, drew a line in the sand and said, you know, we are going to make a change. We can make this change with you or we can make this change without you. It's your decision. We're going to let you have a vote. I think the vote's August 7th. But you know, either way, things are going to have to change for the big boys, or we're going to go find our own playground. Is that what you took from that?
Yes, to an extent, but I actually thought he was a little more heavy-handed last year and was a little lighter about it this year than he probably could have been. I do agree that he intimated at that, but last year, he basically directly came out and said that Whereas this year, he kind of danced around it a little bit more and kind of talked about we see positive signs that the NCAA is progressing and we're hopeful. You know, he kind of talked about that a little bit. Where still in the background or in what he didn't say, you could still understand that he was saying we're the big dog here, and the other four power conferences along with us are going to do what we're going to do. Whereas last year, he literally came out and said something's got to change. So I thought it was interesting to see that he kind of backed off a little bit, but still you could tell that the threat is still there, and that he very much thinks that the SEC, along with the other four power conferences, hold the power.
Yeah, I've got his exact words here. It says, he said, as I've said before, if we do not achieve a positive outcome under the existing big tent of Division I, we will need to consider the establishment of a venue with similar conferences and institutions where we can enact the desired changes in the best interests of our student-athletes. You might say that was not as harsh as it was last year, but I think he went to the Steve Spurrier School of backhanded speak with this. It was a nicer way of digging, but it was a dig nonetheless. And it was a very, you know, to me, very much a line in the sand with the way he put this language out there. It was very thought out how he chose these words. You know, he has to get what he wants, a positive outcome. And I think he is, when I say that, is all five of these big conferences need to get what they're looking for out of the NCAA, or they're going to up and leave, you know. And so this vote that's not received a whole lot of talk until, you know, this conversation he had yesterday, it's here, really. I mean, it's just 3 weeks away, and that vote's coming. And I think the NCAA's got their back against the wall. You know, if they want any part of this whatsoever, they're going to have to succumb to what their wishes are and give them some of this. Because if you think about it now, they're not controlling the money from the bowls as it is. They're already losing out by not having, you know, that's the only one that they control baseball, they control basketball, you know, but they don't control the bowls or the national championship. That's not falling under NCAA. So, you know, they're already at a disadvantage from these conferences. And, you know, I've talked on the podcast before. I don't know what's going to happen. The end-all, be-all is that they're going to go. They're going to go do something, whether it's their own thing or the NCAA says, yeah, you can have all these concessions. My concern is, you know, how many schools is that? Five conferences, and they all have about 12 on average schools. Is that right? So about 64.
The Big 12 is the only one that doesn't have 12 or more.
And they've got 10. So that makes up for the SEC's 14. So that puts them both at 12. How many is that? Pac-12?
Pac-12 now. Big Ten has 14 now because Rutgers and Maryland are on board.
So 62, is that what my math is?
ACC has 14 now too, right?
So 64.
Because Syracuse and,
How convenient, a 64.
You know, the magic number of the NCAA tournament. math is a funny thing. Isn't it?
It is, you know. Wow, what a coincidence. 64. Funny how that works in the divisible of two, and four and eight. And this, wow, it's an exponential number. I think that's the correct mathematical term. I just light bulb, as Gru would say on Despicable Me, if anyone has children under the age of 20, probably at this point. That's a haunting number if that's correct. If there are 64 teams in those five conferences now. But, you know, realistically, like I was getting back to my original point, they don't have the power. NCAA doesn't have the power. But think about all the other member schools of Division I NCAA football. I think those are the ones that are going to, in the long run, suffer. Because if I had the opportunity to play for Kentucky. You know, the bottom of the SEC, and I'm a Kentucky fan. If you don't know anything about this podcast, we have allegiances. And so I bleed blue. Britain's Alabama red. He's crimson. But we each have our own allegiances. But I know Kentucky football is not where it needs to be. But if I were a young man and I could go to Kentucky, who's at the bottom of the SEC, or another school, who's tops in one of the other conferences?
Boise. Oh, the non-power?
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, like a Boise State. Central Florida, who just had a great year, but they're not a Power Five.
You know, you're going to go to the power conference regardless. And then that's going to take geography out of it too, because if you're able to pay the parents to come in and see the game, well, all of a sudden that shrunk the boundaries as well. And I don't think that's been discussed. But, you know, if I were a kid living in the West Coast and was being recruited by Kentucky, well, now all of a sudden, if I'm being recruited by Kentucky or a non-five conference, and my mom and dad can go to a couple games and fly out because they're going to be able to cover all those extra costs, why would I not go to the SEC to get all those extra perks? And so you're just making the better conferences even stronger, because they're going to be able to get all those 3 and 4 star recruits that were going to be stars at these other locations, at these other campuses. They're not going to go there. They're not even going to get the time of day, because a Western Kentucky or a Boise State, they don't have the funds to be able to pay those players and the stipends and the cost of livings and the full ride scholarships and all the other phrases you want to call this. All of a sudden you are on unequal ground, whereas at least now you're on some equal footing. They might have the best facilities in SEC schools and in the top five schools, but you're not in a huge disadvantage in scholarship opportunities. You all have the same number of scholarships. You all have the same limitations that are placed on you. And so all these other schools in Division I are now left out of the cold. And think about all these Division II teams in the last decade that have made the jump to Division I. The USF, the UCF, the Western Kentucky, the Middle Tennessee. I mean, there's dozens of these schools that have now come into these conferences to step into Division I that now basically have knocked themselves back down into the have-nots phase again. That's the interesting fact that is going to happen, whether we want to believe it or not. There's some unintended consequences that's going to befall those other schools.
Yeah, well, and if you really look down the road at what's going to happen, I think, okay, so each school still only has the 25 spots, right? So, yes, I agree with you. That fringe guy that's a 3-star that maybe normally would have gone to, you know, a San Jose State instead of a Kentucky is probably going to try to go to Kentucky because he can maybe get paid to go there. Or if it's not directly paid, it's more of a, you know, the cost of living scholarship or the total cost of education scholarship that we hear about. So I think what it's really going to do is we already are to the point where we've got early commitments, guys who are not graduating until 2016 or committing in 2014. I mean, you want to talk about speeding up the commitment process. So I project to maybe be a 3-star fringe division, or not fringe Division I, but fringe major college football player, as opposed to a Miami of Ohio type of football player, or a Ball State. You know, those guys are going to be like, well, I need to commit right now because I've got a spot right now at a Kentucky or at a Wake Forest, who's in an ACC, who, yeah, they're not a football powerhouse, but hey, they're still Power Five conference. I mean, we've already got like 8th graders being offered by Les Miles, you know, and that's sort of a crazy fringe case, but you're just talking about moving all that up because these kids are going to see, I could go to a lower tier program in the SEC and commit right now, or I could wait and see if I get better, but I still might wind up at San Jose State if I don't get better. I mean, it's just going to change the dynamic of recruiting, and more than recruiting. I mean, this whole thing, the Ed O'Bannon case, like everything, all this pressure on the NCAA to change is going to change the face of college athletics in the next 5 to 10 years in ways that we can't even begin to imagine or predict right now.
No, you're completely right. What we think is going to happen may not be even close. And the things that we might be worried about today might end up working themselves out. But new problems would arise that no one saw coming. And that's the fine line that as a fan of the Big Five conferences and that elite football and national championships and the SEC, you know, I want to see those things. I want to see the level of play continue to be at such a high level. But I am worried that we're walking down a road that when we get down it, we go, wow, this path is not what we needed it to be. And that's going to be the curious thing. I mean, we just spent almost 15 minutes talking about one little thing that Mike Slav talked about in his whole
conversation.
Yeah, the power of the SEC. I'll just hit a couple of other things that I saw. And tell me if my math is correct here. Let me read you another quote. Under the new SEC bowl arrangement, the Capitol Bowl will have the first selection available to the SEC, the Sugar Bowl, and in some years, the Orange Bowl. Once these selections are made, 6 bowls, and he lists them, will constitute a pool. The conference will assign teams to each of these games rather than doing it the old-fashioned way where the bowl selected the teams. We also have agreements with the Birmingham Bowl and the Duck Commander Independence Bowl. So, we've got the National Championship Playoff, which is 4 teams. Potentially, you could have 2 of those being an SEC team. So that's 2.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Capitol Bowl.
The Capitol One Bowl? Is that?
It's the Capitol Bowl is what his quote says. And the Sugar Bowl. And in some years, the Orange Bowl. That's 5. Then we have 6 more bowls. That's 11. And in some years, we have 2 others. So potentially 13 bowl games in a calendar year?
Well, for one thing, the Orange and the Sugar, you know, every other year will be a part of the 4-team playoff, correct? So at least one of those would be eliminated.
Maybe the Orange Bowl is, and on those off years, the Orange Bowl comes.
Yeah, I think so. Like, well, and the Sugar, too. The Sugar would be involved sometimes, and then sometimes it wouldn't be, and it would just be a bowl game, right?
I thought the Sugar Bowl was the new Big Ten Bowl. With the Big Ten every year.
I don't know. It's stumping me here. It's so confusing. My world is changing. I want to say that it's a 6-bowl rotation between Rose, Fiesta, Sugar, Orange, I don't think it's the Cotton Bowl, but it's Jerry World, and then the Chick-fil-A, the game in Atlanta. Those are the 6 rotating, and it's 2 of those are the 4-team semifinal each year, and then there's the national championship. So in those years when 2 of those 6 are the semifinal, there wouldn't actually be a, you know, another Sugar Bowl. That's what I want to say, but I'm kind of going off memory here. So
okay, so that could be so. There's not realistically the possibility that 13 bowl games could happen for the SEC in one year.
Yeah, and are you saying that those other 2, the Duck Commander and the other one, are those new bowls or are they just new sponsors? Because the Duck Commander one would be the one that's in Shreveport that's always been there, right? The Independence Bowl.
Yeah, it's just now the Duck Commander Independence Bowl. It's got a new sponsor. And the Birmingham Bowl.
Which is the one that, like, Ole Miss and – or no, that Pittsburgh went to, like, 4 years in a row, right?
Yeah.
The BBVA Compass, was that one?
Yeah, I think that's the full name of that one, the BBVA Compass Bowl in Birmingham.
So I bet it's not that different. It just sounds different because there's this whole new world that we're living in that no one really understands yet until it actually plays out.
I'm reading that and I'm counting. It's like, that's 13 ball games. There's 14 teams. Wow. So realistically, though, what that's saying is that if you can become bowl eligible in the SEC, we'll find a spot for you.
Yeah.
You know,
and insert joke here about SEC out of conference schedules and how everyone can be bowl eligible because of them.
Hey, we've got SEC now has to play one team from the Big Five conferences that are left, or Big Four conferences that are left.
Everybody's schedule Wake Forest right now.
That used to give Vanderbilt fits. So
that's true.
I don't know how much some of those teams would want it. I mean, realistically, though, that's a funny rule. I mean, there's only a couple of teams out there that aren't doing it.
Yeah, that's what's funny. It's like, oh, well, the SEC passed this rule, but then when you look at everyone's schedules, there's like two teams that weren't already doing it anyway. So
yeah,
it's really not that big of a change.
Yeah, it was like, okay, so now a couple of these teams have to every year schedule one of these opponents, because I mean, even Kentucky has Louisville every year on their conference or their schedule, so they didn't have to worry about it. We already said Vanderbilt plays Wake Forest almost every year.
Yeah.
Georgia plays Georgia Tech. South Carolina plays Clemson. Florida plays Florida State.
Right, and those are just the built-in rivalries. And then you have, you know, LSU has been really good about scheduling, for instance, Wisconsin this year. They played Oregon a couple of years ago. Alabama has done a really good job of having a game like that every year.
I mean, even
I really don't even know who they're targeting with this new rule, except just to say that, okay, you absolutely have to do it now. There's no way to get around it.
Even Tennessee, I mean, they had Oregon last year, and Tennessee was horrible last year.
They have Oklahoma this year.
So I looked at it and didn't – I don't have this in any of my notes, but maybe Mississippi State – or Ole Miss, one of those Mississippi schools might have been one of the programs that doesn't have one of the Big Four, or yeah,
think,
four
or
many conferences.
Now, Ole Miss has played Texas the last 2 years.
Oh yeah, you're right.
But I think you're right about Mississippi State, and I think traditionally you're probably right about Ole Miss. I think that Texas thing was more of an outlier than a norm.
But so I mean, there's a couple of schools that it might apply to, but it wasn't a big deal. I mean, It's basically, we're going to keep doing what we're doing, and we're going to say that it's this. So, here, you look that way, and I'm going to run that way. You know,
yeah.
It
was a diversion to not get people to talk about the fact that the SEC isn't going to a 9-game schedule.
That's exactly what it was.
That's all it was. It was a, hey, well, okay, we're not going to a 9-game, but at least we're requiring everyone to play, you know, a power five team. And if you're not paying close attention, you're like, oh, okay, well, that's good. Except if you are paying close attention, you know, well, wait a minute, everybody's already doing that anyway.
Yeah. How's that different than what it is now?
Exactly. And not to mention a power five team includes places like Indiana and Wake Forest and, you know.
And you can't say Duke, but yeah, I mean.
Yeah, you can't say Duke anymore, but in most years you could say Duke and Virginia, who's won like 8 games in the past 6 years. I mean, so it was a diversion, and which gets into a whole nother debate about within 5 years, will we be at a 9-game schedule anyway? And we haven't even talked about SEC Media Days yet, so I don't know if we should go down that road.
All of this conversation has been spurred because of Mike Slav's
one comment.
Well, two comments now.
Two, you're right.
And the last one that I saw that was just mind-blowing, and I read this one to you already. For the 16th consecutive year, the conference led the country in attendance, averaging nearly 76,000 fans per game. Over 7.5 million fans went to our game, Mike Slav said. And that 76,000 fans per game is even taken into account Vanderbilt's, what, 20,000 people that show up to a game?
Yeah.
Well, it only holds 40, right?
Is it?
Yeah, 42,000?
30-something, but it may, after the expansion with Franklin, it may be 40-something.
I was thinking 42.
But still, it's bringing down the average.
Yeah, even if it sells out, it's bringing down the average. So that's amazing. That's just a that number's huge.
Well, and what that really speaks to is how genius this SEC network idea is. I mean, when you talk about 7.6 million actually attend games, and that's walking through the gates. They're not talking about people who just go to tailgate and wind up watching the game on a TV outside, which is I've had to do at Alabama games before because I couldn't get into the stadium, and I'm sure other people have done that, whether they could get in or not. I mean, you're talking about exponentially more who are at home watching, you know, six SEC games on a Saturday in the fall. The impact is just huge, and the SEC network is just going to clean up. And it's been so interesting to watch all these different providers, you know, the Comcasts and the Dish Networks and all, the timing of when they announce whether a deal's in place or whether they're negotiating a deal. Or
Let's be careful. Comcast, we're all Comcast here, and they've not announced anything yet.
Well, they've said that that it will happen. You will have it by August 14th. We don't know any details other than they're like in negotiations, and we should just trust that it's going to happen. But you're right. Until I can flip to the SEC network on my Comcast cable box, I'm going to be pretty nervous about it. And I will switch if it gets to August 14th and I don't have the ability to do that. But I'm holding out because switching companies sucks. Everyone knows that.
And keeping the company you have sucks. It's just all around. It's
lose-lose.
It is. But at least you don't have to do anything to have bad service with where you are now.
Exactly.
So you're right. The only thing I worry about, and is this a legitimate worry, will the college football suffer some of the same fates that NFL's running right now? I mean, 10 years ago, you wouldn't imagine stadiums not being able to sell out. But, you know, now you're having stadiums all across the country having issues selling out and being close to meeting their blackout restrictions because people find it easier to stay at home with their high-definition televisions, the ability to do whatever they want, whenever they want, pause, rewind, in their own homes. You've got massive screens. I mean, you've got 70, 80, 90-inch LED screens now. The experience can be better except for the tailgating. I mean, what do they have that fear? Because six games, now you suddenly you get to see your team and three other teams in the West that you want to see lose.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a very real thing. Like the one thing the college game has going, and you touched on it, is the atmosphere that I personally believe just the NFL just can't touch. It's just kind of hard to beat going to, whether it's your alma mater or just the school you grew up rooting for, you know, spending a weekend down there. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. I went 2 years ago, I went to watch the LSU-Alabama game at a buddy's house who happens to own, like, four dental practices and has a large house, bought a giant projector and literally, like, a 20-foot screen that you project on. And that's in high definition, and that's how I watched the LSU game. You want to say that that's not better than spending $300 for a ticket that's in like the top five rows of a 100,000-seat stadium where I'm spending $10 per item at the concession stand? I can't drink beer while I'm in the stadium. You know, the traffic getting in and out of small SEC towns outside of places like Nashville where Vanderbilt is. I mean, it's a problem for every major sport right now. It's so much better to watch on TV.
The drive time that you have.
Yeah, I mean, all the factors that go in.
The packing up a family now that you're a dad. I mean.
Oh, especially if you have a family. It's almost undoable. It's so expensive.
It doesn't take long to do that math you were saying. That $300 really is more like $600, $700 when it's all said and done. You know, maybe even more.
Yeah. Easily.
Maybe even more. It doesn't take too many of those to have your own 120-inch projection screen in your own home.
Yeah, and all of a sudden you can watch every game on that, and not just your team's games. You can watch, as you said, every important game that you care about is on, where if you go to the Alabama-LSU game, all of a sudden you can't watch that Auburn-Texas A&M game.
Or if you want to go to the bathroom, there's no line.
Yeah, and by the way, you don't have to pay $8 for a beer or not be able to get beer in the stadium because this is college football. You can walk to your fridge where you have a 12-pack of whatever. I mean, there's
and the
a
stocked
lot of
bar behind
that make
you.
It easier yeah. to not go to the game.
That's my concern is that, you know, is that going to hurt the fan experience long term?
Well, I'm actually excited about it because I honestly think we talk about all these other factors. I honestly think that the cost is the most prohibitive thing that prevents people from going. I mean, for instance, right now, when Alabama's rolling, it's hard to get a ticket under $200 for an Alabama game, no matter who the opponent is. We're talking about bad opponents. And eventually those prices, I think, don't they have to come down if people quit coming because the TV, the home experience is so good? I mean, doesn't it have to get to a point where, okay, we can't charge $200 for a ticket because people aren't coming anymore? It's so in that sense, I'm actually excited about it. Maybe a normal family can afford to take their kids and their wife and all that to a game because ticket prices have to drop. But maybe I'm living in a pipe dream there. I don't know.
I mean, we can money is the driver for all this. As long as the money's flowing in, they're not going to change things. They're not going to change ticket prices. I mean, you look at we can move on just a little bit and tie this in to Spurrier. You know, Spurrier talked today, and I know you didn't get to read a lot of it or hear a lot of it, but one of the things he talked about were donors. You know, when he started, South Carolina had $1 million donor. I think he said today they have 12 or 15. I can't remember which the number is.
I'm shocked that they only had one when he started. That's interesting. I hadn't heard that.
But that's annual giving. They're giving $1 million a year.
Right.
You know, and now they're up to over a dozen of those $1 million donors.
That's what winning will do.
Winning will do, but also being in the SEC helps. You know, because I don't know, how many years has South Carolina been in the SEC? 20 now?
So they were a part of the group that expanded it and caused the start of the SEC championship, which was 92. So this would be their 22nd year,
22 years. And Spurrier's been there 10 years this year. So, you know, the first dozen years he wasn't there, you know, you get a good coach, you get the massive expansion that the SEC's had over the last 15 years. You're going to get those things to fall into place. You know, so some of that is I would say there's a good portion of that Spurrier, but some of it's just because of who they are, where they are, how they've grown inside the SEC. But you look at that and realize that money's the driver. I mean, that's the reason why they want to break away or get concessions from the NCAA. It's the reason why they signed the TV deal that they did. So as long as the money's coming in, as long as they're going to get paychecks from the TVs, they don't care about the ticket prices. You know, they're still going to charge what they're going to charge, because in the big scheme of things, if you looked at the accounting and the line item for in-game revenue versus what they get on TV, it's not up at the top. It's not one of the money generating side of things. It doesn't do it like some of the other stuff, like donors. And I mean, $12 million, that's pretty close to what they could bring in revenue, I would think.
Yeah. Well, and so that's sort of another interesting point is,
I mean, how many does South Carolina have? 80,000, I'm guessing?
I don't actually know, but I mean, that would be my guess.
We'll use that for round numbers just to – and if 200,000 – so 80,000 times 200 for the average ticket – that's $16 million a game.
Yeah, but I think Alabama's at the high end of what the average ticket is. I bet South Carolina the average ticket is more like what, 180? I don't know.
If it's 100, now all of a sudden you're at $8 million.
Still a lot of, yeah. I mean, that's not chump change. But another interesting thing about that is we agree that money is the driving force behind everything. So at what point does the SEC begin selling alcohol? Like, there's that whole balancing act of how much money you could bring in by selling alcohol, not to mention the sponsorship dollars of a Bud Light sponsoring, you know, Bryant-Denny Stadium or whatever against crazy SEC fans who already want to kill each other without alcohol during a three-hour game, other than the stuff they're sneaking in, which we know is a lot.
I think it's going to be sooner.
You think it'll happen, though?
I do.
Sure?
Yeah, I don't know when. In the next 5 years is my guess. I mean, realistically, Britton, if you knew that you could walk in, and even if it was an $8 beer, you
could still get it.
But you could still get it. You wouldn't be slamming Makers and Coke and doing as many shots before the game.
Well, that's true.
So,
I wouldn't. I don't know about some.
You wouldn't, but there is a good percentage of individuals that would fall into that category. There's still some that are going to get theirs and then sneak theirs in and not have to worry about those $8 beers. Yes, but I do think that that would curb some of the drunkenness at some point, because it's a matter of when you tailgate, you binge drink. You were there to drink. You're there to socialize. Let's call it what it is. You're there to drink as much as you can, as quick as you can before you get to the game.
Yeah, it's like you have to build up the amount in your system to withstand a 3.5 hour period where you can't get any.
and by having access to it, it's the same thing with pot. I mean, if you legalized pot, now all of a sudden you control how it's being distributed to some degree. The same thing would apply at the stadium. Now, you're still going to have people to be able to tailgate and to drink, but you know, now it's not going to be to the same levels, because they know that they can get their fix, or they can get that extra drink while they're at the game. They don't have to worry about getting that buzz and seeing if they can maintain it for that 3 hours. That's my opinion, but I think that it's not going to solve all that problem, because there are a lot of people that go just not standing up straight drunk at football games, and that's what they go there for.
Well, and you're dealing with college students too, which is part of the difference between the NFL and college. Not that college students don't go to an NFL game, but you're dealing with thousands of college students who, let's be honest, we were all in college at one point. You know, the way you view drinking when you're in college is vastly different from the way you view it when you're 30, even late 20s, and certainly into your 30s and 40s.
No, it's not. No.
Well, the difference is you wish you could still do it.
Yeah, there's the real thing right there. You wish you were still 18 stealing beers.
Yeah, so there's just a ton about this landscape. I mean, we touched on a ton of issues, from beer in the stadium to paying players to when recruits commit. I mean, it's going to be – what it's going to do is make the next 5 years outside of the four-month football season super fascinating. Like, you're going to have something to sink your teeth into and pay attention to outside of the white lines, because – change is coming, and it's just I don't think anyone can really, really predict, you know, what the effects are going to be, and it's just really going to be interesting.
So Vanderbilt was ahead of the curve with their marketing campaign last year, right?
What was their marketing campaign?
Wasn't it that song, "A Change Is Coming"?
Oh yes, it was. You're right. I can still see it. James Franklin in the film room, apparently watching Penn State film, because he left. But yeah, you're right.
But no, you're right. It's giving, and the SEC is doing a pretty good job of this now, to be football relevant, almost like the NFL relevant, where they're relevant almost all year long.
Year round, yeah.
You know, you still have a lag where late March, you've got basketball that does take precedence for March. After that, April and May, you've got some draft talk and SEC players going to the draft and some things like that. You've got a little downtime in May and June, but once it starts back up, there's basically 10 months out of the year right now that it's football. And so they're doing a pretty good job staying relevant. I mean, if you look at our podcast, we did really good having lots of content to talk about for 10 months out of the year. These last two, not so much. And that's the way it's been the last few years. And that window is just getting shorter and shorter. And I don't know how much of that's going to be good, but, you know, the way the NFL thinks, as long as you're talking about us,
Yeah, that's all we care about.
It's okay. Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
It's that marketing adage, you know, bad news. There's no bad news. It's all just news at that point.
Right.
And so, I don't know. Let's talk about a few coaches for a few minutes if you want to.
I would love to talk about coaches.
That was a little creepy the way you said that.
I'm just so excited to be talking about football again. Sorry, I apologize if it was creepy. I'm just so pumped. It's football, finally. It's here.
Well, you know, we're all allowed to be a little creepy when it comes to football season.
This is all I have.
That might be a show title right there. I'm writing that down.
All right.
Talk about a coach real quick.
Okay, coach. Let's see. Who went? Okay. I don't know if anyone outside of Nashville cares about this. Did anyone think it was interesting that Derek Mason sort of went completely opposite of what James Franklin went with the whole we expect to win the East, we expect to – you know, James Franklin was always, I'm only talking about – my next opponent, which at this time of year is whoever they're playing on September 1st. And Derek Mason came straight out and said he wasn't disrespectful. He wasn't talking trash like Lane Kiffin did at Tennessee, but he said we expect to compete for SEC East titles. Do you think that that's a mistake? Do you think that's smart? Is he just trying to rep the brand and keep, you know, kind of like the Bruce Pearl approach, just talk about Vanderbilt, market them, and we'll be relevant? Or what do you think?
I mean, he's got a gold card. What else do you need, right? You saw his business card, right? That gold plated.
No, I didn't.
It's like an actual metal gold-plated card is what his business cards are. He's only got a, you know, so it's a very limited number. But
be careful who you give those out to, I
exactly.
guess,
right? I don't know what to think. You look at his conversation, and the Vanderbilt fans were expecting to have a really good year this coming year before the whole Franklin stuff. I mean, they had high expectations. They were expecting to keep growing off of this year. They were taking it to a, you know, a bowl win, and they had great expectations for next year. And so he has to, if he wants to keep that same buy-in, because us being in Nashville, we're real familiar about this fan base. It's not going to be hard for Derek Mason to lose what James Franklin has done.
No, it could all go away this season.
And so
if they don't win,
he has to do something to try to keep that fan base engaged so that he can continue to at least hold on to what's already there. Because that fan base is finicky. They're fair weather. They've had to win consistently, and they still can't even fill up that stadium. I mean, Franklin constantly was on the airways here, trying, you know, pimping the product to try to get folks to come out, calling parents on breaks to get their students to stay so they could go to games. I mean, you don't expect to have to work like that as a head football coach in the SEC to get your stadium filled up with your fans. And so Derek Mason had to do something to try to win those fans over. And I think that was his way of doing it. Now, whether he can back it up or not this year is another situation. I mean, because you're going in, and he's already talked about his offense is now going more West Coast. He's going from a 4-3 to a 3-4. And you hear people talk about how hard that is to change in the NFL. Well, now you're going to do that with young players. So what does that do for you, trying to switch up your defense like that? I think there's a lot of unknowns for Vanderbilt, but I think Derek Mason had to say something like that. On a separate note, I don't know if you got to hear the audio from it. I know they were simulcasting on the radio stations up here, and I'm not the best speaker in the world, but if you go back and you listen to that, there was an about every 10 seconds. And this is a head football coach making, what's he making, $2 million, $3 million a year?
Honestly, I don't know.
You can hire yourself a voice coach. You know, learn a little bit about
your words.
What's that?
Stop using the crutch words.
Yes. I mean, I could not. It drove me so insane that I had to switch. I couldn't listen to him. Every time he was making a conversation, he would get to that crutch word. He would go, and just keep talking. And it's, for someone that, and it will come. I mean, I know that there had to be a lot of nerves because this is.
It's the first time he's been in the big chair in the spotlight like that.
And it's not just any big chair. It's the SEC. And media days in Hoover are crazy. So there was probably some nerves in there. But Vanderbilt needs to take that back. And if they find somebody there to listen, they need to work on that. And they need to give him some coaching skills on that. Because it is difficult. I mean, sitting here doing a podcast, I've caught myself listening to some of the stuff when we play back. I'll hit a crutch word or two, and it's like, oh, man, you did that again. But and it's hard. It is very difficult. So I'm not saying that he's at fault, but you've got to think that the Vanderbilt program, I mean, it's Vanderbilt University. It's not
right.
You expect, you
an
know,
air of intelligence from their representatives.
And it's not a matter of intelligence to use a crutch word, but it's a matter of confidence in your speaking abilities and knowing what you're going to say and how you're going to deliver that. And to have that coming from someone at Vanderbilt talking about the caliber of players they're bringing in, it was difficult for me to listen to. But that's just my own personal pet peeve. And so now there's going to be, I hope, lots of people go back and listen to that and go, oh, he's so right.
Counting all the ums. Yeah, well, not to get into everything about Vanderbilt, because that will, I'm sure we'll dive into this in depth with our season previews, but to me, and this has to be the first time I've said this in my 30 years on this planet, they have to be one of the most interesting teams coming into this season. The, you know, just a deplorable program for so long, never won anything, and then they have three amazing years under James Franklin, and now here we go. We've got this guy. It seems like a good hire because of the Stanford ties, the similarities between the programs. But can he maintain the success? They have a tough schedule. Can he win? Can he get them bowl eligible? You know, it's going to be – they're going to be fascinating. And you're probably right. I think he had to try to engage his fans by, you know, talking a little bit of a bravado game. But they're just going to be fascinating. And I don't know if I've ever said I'm fascinated by Vanderbilt football. Even when Franklin was there, it was just kind of like, yeah, whatever. But – it's going to be really interesting to see if he can maintain what Franklin did, which was an all-time coaching job for the last century, to bring a program like Vanderbilt to the point that he brought them. And that's why he's now at a better program.
Well, I mean, and the good news for Mason is that Tennessee is still going to be bad this year. And I don't have Vanderbilt's schedule in front of me yet. We'll go in deeper when we look at their previews, but they've got
That's
Tennessee.
Very helpful, though.
What's that?
That's very helpful, though, Tennessee being down.
Tennessee is way down. Kentucky's still going to be not good. So you're going to have.
The entire East was down when Franklin was there outside of Georgia and South Carolina, and that was very helpful. Florida has been on one of their worst runs.
You say that, but 2 years ago they were 11-2.
Yeah, you're right, but.
We just think they're bad. You're right.
Just,
no.
It just feels bad for Florida.
It does.
You're right. They were 11-2, but it feels bad for Florida.
Have you ever felt bad about 11-2? You did when you're Florida like 2 years ago. You're
Alabama
right.
Alabama fans felt bad about that last year.
Who did?
Alabama fans.
Yeah, but that was for a completely different reason. But if you look at Vanderbilt, they're going to have Georgia tough. They're going to have Florida much improved. At least all indications to listen, you know, the quarterback's now healthy. You know, where's Drew this year? Cause Drew was touting him last year as a Heisman candidate. You know, maybe he was just a year early. But that all indications are Driscoll's looking really good down in Florida. You've got South Carolina. That's three tough matchups, but you've got winnable games again, and Missouri's still going to be pretty tough. That's four. So
their out of conference is terrible. I mean, if they don't go 4-0 and they're out of conference, something's wrong.
So there's a good chance for six wins on their schedule. Just looking at it, I don't know who their West opponent is this year.
I just pulled it up. They've got Ole Miss is
their
permanent.
Yeah, and that could be tough for them.
And then they're at Mississippi State, and I think Mississippi State is a dark horse team this year. So that's, I mean,
Dak Prescott
is going to be tough.
Yeah.
Dak Prescott may be the best quarterback in the league.
So, you know, that's six wins might be
that's tough.
You know, it's going to be very difficult for them to do what he's doing next year.
Yeah.
But I don't know. And the other thing that he said, and I wish we're spending a lot of time on a team that nobody cares about, but it was interesting. I've got some friends here in Nashville that are just diehard Vandy fans, and I don't understand why. But outside of that, there's just not a lot of them. But he did say an interesting – do you see his comment about having no red shirts?
Yeah, that's weird to me, especially at a place like Vanderbilt.
Yeah. You know, and George Plaster, our local guy here, was talking about it today. It's like, you know, that's not been the Vanderbilt of the past. So what, you know, is that going to be something going forward? And can you realistically make that kind of claim? I mean, unless you're going to use
it's
great
just hyperbole, you can't.
Unless you're going to say gray shirt's not red shirt, you know, but
there are so many different factors that can lead to a red shirt. That is such hyperbole. There's no way you can be like, we're a no red shirt program. That's complete BS. Which makes me think you're right. He's just saying things to get his fan base to not jump off a cliff before the season starts, because they will do that at the drop of a hat.
Well, yeah, and if they can, I won't go down that road. I'll just bite my tongue there. Let's talk about a different program right now.
Agreed. Everyone that just fell asleep wants to hear about someone that's not Vanderbilt.
Yeah. Well, the old ball coach, HBC.
You can always count on him.
Always. I mean, Jesse Palmer said it. He pegged it perfect. Is that you have to have Steve Spurrier not at the 10 o'clock leading us off time slot. He needs to be in the prime time, 7 o'clock, where all eyeballs can be on him.
Because, yeah, he's your anchor leg.
Because you never know what's going to come out of his mouth, but you always know that it's going to be great. It's going to be quotable.
Yep.
You know, I think you've got some of them pulled up, but
to be getting better and better too as he gets older and cares less about what other people think about him too.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Was, you know, he's cemented himself as an extraordinary coach, so he doesn't care what the hell people think about him anymore.
Yeah,
and so he's just going to say what he feels, but he's going to do it in such a way that that you can't say he's talking bad about you, because he's giving you a compliment. I mean, you look at his Alabama quote. You know, Nick Saban has to be the best recruiter of all time, I think was the quote. You know, that's a compliment in and of itself when you read that on the surface. But you take it and put it in the context as the way he said it. You know, he's basically saying that Nick Saban can't win the big ones. He's with that kind of talent, they should have five SEC championships, and they only have two. So, comment from the Alabama fan.
Well, I mean, it's Spurrier. I mean, he loves poking the bear. To say that Saban has underachieved at Alabama is hilarious. You know, regardless of the recruiting success, to say that he's underachieved is obviously just slightly ridiculous. But at the same time, there's sort of this tiny little element of truth that, okay, so he's had the best recruiting class five out of the last 6 years. How have you not won more? Or, you know, what else do you expect besides 10, 11 wins a season? Like, there's just enough of an element of truth to it to kind of get under your skin as an Alabama fan, or as Nick Saban, or Nick Saban probably doesn't even know he said that yet, but, you know, there's just enough there to
he knows. He knows 30 seconds after he said it if he wasn't watching.
but in the grand scheme of things, like, really, can you honestly say that Nick Saban has underachieved when he's won three national titles and two SEC championships? I mean, that's, you know, that's an unprecedented run of success. But at the same time, it's just, he's just jabbing you. And you either love him or you hate him, or you love what he says or you hate what he says. But, I mean, personally, I think it's hilarious, because I can take it with a grain of salt and know that he's just kind of Spurrier being Spurrier.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, even even after all those comments, Alabama fans understand that Steve Spurrier is just being Steve Spurrier.
Yeah.
You know, he made...
And that's what makes him the old ball coach. I mean, that's what makes him great.
And then he went and made the comments about the Texas A&M rivalry game that they're creating, the Alamo Award or Alamo Trophy. Did you get to hear those comments?
Let's see. I think I've got it pulled up here. Actually, it's going to take me a second to find
That's
it, so
okay.
Keep talking.
He starts talking about Davy Crockett and 10 guys from East Tennessee. I thought they were the heroes of the Alamo, not some guy from Columbia, South Carolina that went over to the Alamo and fought there. You know, so he just starts going into this whole history lesson about how Davy Crockett went over to from East Tennessee with his band of 10 men and went to the Alamo and starts, and he's factual about all this information, but, you know, he was making light of the fact that they're trying to create this rivalry game between two teams that are basically the furthest apart in the SEC. How do you create a rivalry like that? There has to be a reason for it to be a rivalry, and you just can't fabricate it and call it something and make it a rivalry. Like their game against Missouri, they call it the Columbia Mayor's Cup or something like that because they both live in a city called Columbia. How ridiculous is that? I mean, there is true hatred between Tennessee fans and Alabama fans. That is a rivalry game. Georgia-Florida, that's a rivalry game. Kentucky-Tennessee, we always lose to Tennessee except for a couple years ago we had that win. But that's still a rivalry game for Kentucky. And so for them to be able to say that this just because they both share the same name needs to be a rivalry. And he's so true in that aspect of it.
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, Tennessee-Alabama has a rivalry because 100 years ago they decided to play each other. So 25 years from now, maybe A&M South Carolina will be the biggest rivalry in the SEC. Who knows? I mean, it's just the only thing that differentiates those two rivalries is history, and all we got to do is create a little history, and I'm all for creating some history. So
I'm for creating. I'm not for fabricating.
Yeah, but to keep the traditional rivals of Auburn, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, you have to – someone has to – play someone else permanently, and that gets to the whole debate about should we do away with that, and basically there are six fan bases that say no because they want to keep that traditional rival, and others that would say we should get rid of it, but I don't know, it just kind of depends on what side of the fence you fall on, I guess.
I'm okay with keeping a team, but you can't fabricate and make it a rivalry till it becomes a rivalry.
Yeah, you can just put it on the graphic when the game starts.
Oh, then now it's a rivalry game.
That's all you have to do.
What you do is you put it on rivalry week. That's how you make it.
There you go. You schedule it on rivalry week, and you put the word rivalry on the graphic, on the scoreboard graphic on ESPN.
How silly am I? ESPN can make it a rivalry. I love it. What else did the old ball coach say that you loved?
Let's see.
And then while you're looking at that, you know, briefly touch on, you know, Tennessee was making the rounds today. They had their is it the alumni picnic?
Yeah, here, they were at Lipscomb today.
Here in Nashville tonight, and the old coach was down in Hoover today. So they were making some rounds, using up some private jet fuel up there, it sounds like.
Yeah. Who all went today? Who has gone so far? We had Vanderbilt and Auburn on Vanderbilt, Auburn, Florida day one, which was Monday.
Yeah.
Today was who all went today?
South Carolina, Florida. No, I'm sorry. South Carolina, Florida. Tennessee. Where was the other one? Mississippi State, because Dak Prescott. And A&M, Sumlin. Someone was asked about Manziel. Is he happy not coaching? Basically, is he happy not coaching Manziel anymore?
Yeah, his first weren't his first like four questions about Manziel, and he's kind of like, okay, let's talk about the team I actually have.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what else are you going to ask about, let's be honest? I mean, Manziel, A&M has had great success, and I do think Sumlin is a good coach. But talk about lightning in a bottle. They had one of the most dynamic players in college football history, and he is 99% responsible for why they were relevant. And now he's gone, and it's like, of course your first question is, what are you going to do to remain relevant after you lost one of the most dynamic players in college football history?
Now there's and there's another Spurrier quote about Sumlin, how he's a tremendous negotiator. Is that what it said?
Yeah.
with his new contract. So
yeah, he had a couple of good shots at coaches. What did he said? Spurrier on Gus Malzahn. Gus Malzahn is one of the best coaches in the country. They don't win that national championship in 2010 unless he is there, which is just like kind of twisting the knife in Gene Chizik's side, which is, you know, everyone knows that, but only Spurrier says that about about another coach.
Yeah. And the Chizik, or the Auburn presser, that part of Media Days, that was kind of, you were expecting more, especially with Nick Marshall getting busted with pot, you know, just prior to that.
What do you think about the whole, you know, I've heard some media members say that by them not bringing him to Media Days, it's kind of prolonged the story. You know, now we're going to be talking about his pot arrest. Will he be suspended? And I guess we'll talk about it a little bit, but I don't know that I agree with that, whereas if he had gone, they would have asked him questions and it would be over. I mean, whether he'd gone or not, it's not like they were going to announce that he was suspended for the Arkansas game. I feel like we're going to talk about it a little bit. It was a tiny minor arrest. It's not like he's going to be kicked off the team. He may be suspended for half a game or even a full game, but Arkansas sucks, so they're going to destroy him. I just feel like it's kind of a non-story either way. Every school has a handful of guys get busted for this in the off season. This just happens to be a starting quarterback who's a potential Heisman Trophy contender, but it's going to be over as soon as the first game starts.
Yeah, it's going to be over by then. I think it'll linger a little longer. If it happened a week ago, there's no doubt in my mind that he needed to be there. With it just happening the weekend prior, I do agree with what some of the folks says, is that Auburn might not have the confidence in Nick Marshall to be able to get up there and make a statement.
Yeah, well, that's true. If you've heard him speak publicly, he's not exactly the most well-spoken.
And so, so if that's the reason, I could understand that. I mean, in the big scheme of things, we just, once they announce what his suspension is, there's going to be another flare-up of interest in this story, and then it's going to die down just like that, and nobody's going to care. Because all he was doing was smoking pot. And let's face it, I bet you a majority of the players on SEC football teams are smoking pot. So,
well over 50%.
I said more than, so I wasn't going to go how high. I just wanted to cover my bases. But You know they're doing it. We all know they do it. We don't care that they're doing it.
We don't care at all. Just be good at football.
It's the same thing with the performance-enhancing drugs. We know they're doing it. Just, we want to see a good product on the field.
Yep.
And so with that being said, if they would have had a little more time to determine what the suspension would have been and could have announced that and that been it, blown up, that would have been ideal. Even if Nick Marshall wasn't there, ideally, if I were in Auburn's PR camp, I would have loved to have said, let's get the suspension stuff figured out today, right now, get it announced, because let's think about it. They were one of the first ones to go Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Think about all the other stuff that's going to bury that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even now, we had to get to the end of the podcast and go, oh, yeah, there was that Nick Marshall stuff.
Because you're going to have comments like Spurrier or whoever else that are just going to divert your attention.
Yeah, I mean, so if you look at it and look at They were first. They went right after Mike's live did yesterday. So, I mean, Gus Malzahn could have, if they would have had the ability to, this was, in my opinion, ideal. As announced it in that press conference, if they didn't have the confidence in Nick Marshall, announced it, let him prepare a statement, release it via a presser. Don't even have to do a video, just do a written apology type of thing, and get that put out. And then it's going to be done, because you had 13 other schools that are going to go after you that we're going to want to know more information about. And so all of a sudden it becomes a non-issue at that point. But they didn't. So now it's going to become news again once the announcement's made on what the punishment is, what the suspension will be.
Well, they also didn't really have time. I mean, you have to it was, what, 4 or 5 days before? I mean, you have to – I would think allow a little bit of time for the legal process to play out before you determine, you know, what if the charges get dropped? You don't want to suspend your starting quarterback for the opener, which happens to be an SEC team, if all of a sudden there's no fire there. So, I mean, they couldn't really do anything about it. And that's a good point, that I don't know that I would trust Marshall in front of a bunch of cameras being asked that question over and over again to respond in a way in which we are comfortable. So it was probably the smartest move they could make, but you're right. It's going to, I guess, lend a little bit to kind of igniting the story as we go on, but I don't know what else they could have done.
Yeah. They needed a couple more days to a week of this being old news, so they had time to formulate what was going to happen. What were the charges really going to be? Are they going to stick? Have all that information and then be able to come in and make those announcements, move on, and it would have been buried. We would have talked about it day one, and that's the, you know, we'd occasionally mentioned it, but it would have been a non-story after that. But it's not, and they're going to have to deal with it for a few more minutes. But nobody cares. You know, he broke the team rules. He broke the law. He's going to have some sort of suspension. But it's not earth-shattering. I mean, if you're in Oregon, you can't even be tested for drugs.
Right.
You know, it's so prevalent up there in the Northwest. I mean, Washington State, it's now legal for recreational use. Colorado, it's legal for recreational use. But you cannot even be drug tested for marijuana. You know, so that's what's coming. And that's coming to all 50 states at some point, just a matter of how quickly that rolls down. And then this really becomes a non-issue. It's like, how would you like to be that person, you know, 10 years from now after pot's been legalized forever and you've got an arrest record because you had pot, you know?
It's like, right. Speaking of which, talk about a recruiting advantage, man. If I'm in Washington, I'm playing that up right now. Send your kids here and smoke all the pot they want because they're going to do it anyway.
You don't tell that one when they sit down with the parents, though.
Yeah, not with the parents.
They do that on the campus.
Depending on the parent, maybe some of the parents, not all the parents.
You definitely do it on campus tours, but you know, you test the waters for the others.
Yeah.
Let's see. Anything else from Media Days that was just unbelievably catchy that we need to talk about? We mentioned just briefly Dak Prescott. I think he impressed a lot of folks with his conference. I think there's a lot of weight on his shoulders to carry that team this year, and they got high expectations because of him.
Yeah, I believe that our preview of Mississippi State will come up a lot in that conversation, would be my guess.
Well, if Blair quits hitting deer, maybe we could talk about it more tonight.
Yeah, he would know a little bit more than we will, but. But yeah, he's Mississippi State is going to be a very exciting team this year. I'm very intrigued by them.
It really is. And he was saying that. I mean, if you listen to our preview last year, Mississippi State, I mean, Blair nailed it. It is what they were. They were going to be good. They could have been better. The product was better last year, but their record wasn't going to show it. And that's exactly what happened. But this year was the year, he said. This year we're going to be really good, and that's the way it's shaping up with with Mississippi State, and so, they've got a lot to be excited for down there. I mean, they've got a big, huge, brand new addition with some luxury suites, and that stadium's going to look, it was already a nice stadium, but it's going to look really nice. They've done some really nice things there, down there in, at Starkville. So lots to be excited for everywhere in the SEC. I mean, the only stadium that's just in horrible shape is Vanderbilt, and they even talk about renovations at some point there. Be curious how they can do that, but and what they can make that happen. But, you know, realistically, everybody in the SEC has got something to be excited for somehow. You know, Florida, I didn't hear a lot from Muschamp's news conference as far as being quote-worthy. You know, I mean, lots of great news from Driscoll, you know, being finally being healthy. You know, that injury just was devastating for him last year and for the team.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't – it was interesting that he acknowledged his hot seat status. You know, I think a lot of coaches kind of do the, well, I don't really pay attention to that. I'm just trying to win the next game. And he actually came out and said something to the effect of, I realize the situation I'm in. I know we have to win. And I thought that was interesting. But, I mean, nothing real earth-shattering there. Their entire season depends on – Dirk Cutter, is that the offensive coordinator's name from Duke that they got?
I think so.
I mean, their entire season depends on how he and Jeff Driscoll interact and how they turn things around. Other than that, they have, especially defensively, all the talent in the world and no reason. They don't have a ton of great skill position talent, but they have no reason to not win 9 or 10 games if their quarterback play is what it should be and if their offensive coordinator is what it should be, and it has not been.
They have no reason, but other than it's the SEC and they still have South Carolina, they still have Georgia, they still have who else on their slate?
Well, they always play LSU, which is one of the tough things. But still, you are Florida. You're one of the top dogs. Like, unless things are just going really, really badly, you should win 9 games. That's just how it is. That's how it is for the top 2-3 programs in each division. It's just unacceptable to not win 9 games unless you have crazy circumstances, which they had unbelievable injuries last year. But the injuries to me weren't the thing. It was the fact that they don't have quarterback play, and I've never been sold on Driscoll. I'm still not sold. I'll believe it when I see it, but we're kind of getting into a Florida preview now, so I don't want to go there too far.
Well, I'll bite my tongue because I was getting ready to start talking about, I don't think they're going to be at 9 wins, but you're right. We don't want to give our previews away yet. Cause then I start looking at it and I could change my mind. I think that's the bulk of the first half of media days. Still lots of teams left. I know there's going to be a lot of great quotes coming. Another coach that's always good for some quotes is Les Miles. He's due up tomorrow. You know, and Saban almost closes it out. I think he's next to last. And Kentucky ends up wrapping things up for everybody on Thursday. So lots to look forward to. We will try. I think there's been some discussion, maybe trying to do a second podcast this week to do the last half of media days, since the first half has been so much fun. And we discussed, we went so much further than I thought we would with just me and you and 2 days of media days. But there's just so much fun stuff, and it's football. It's right around the corner.
Football's here.
So, guys, we appreciate you listening in. Britton, if someone wants to follow what you have to say, can they follow you anywhere?
Absolutely. Follow me on Twitter at RTRBritta. That's RTRBRITA. I tweet about not just Alabama, but college football and sports in general. So I'd love to have you. Love to tweet with you.
Awesome. And then, of course, SECSRT. Remember those 6 letters. You can find us anywhere. Podcasts, videos on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. We're all on there with those 6 little letters, and that's all you need to remember is SECSRT. And with that, everyone, we are going to call this podcast done.